free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now is not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine, and let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
All right, welcome everybody. Got an excellent show today. I'm very glad to tell you that our guest is Larry Pratt. I've been telling you since last week that we're going to do Guns 101 today. So all of you who have been hiding in the shadows, ashamed that you're libertarians or conservatives and you don't know enough about guns and you don't want to tell anybody, well, now there's no shame today. All right, we're going to get to ask our questions of the expert. We'll bring him on in just a minute. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Bob Murphy, your favorite economist. So make sure and send me some questions, just things you don't understand. It doesn't have to be some oddball question, just some basic thing you just don't get, like that everybody you read takes for granted that you know it, but you don't know it. So could Bob explain it? So as I say, I'll try and post a blog post at tomwoods.com on this today. You can post a question in the comments there or tweet me questions at Thomas E. Woods with the hashtag Ask Murphy. I want to ask Bob some really juicy questions tomorrow. By the end of the week, I'm going to be doing the pre-recording. We'll still do the stream every day at noon Eastern, but I'm going to pre-record, get better audio, probably starting Thursday. Then Friday, we'll have Kevin Gutzman. It's going to be great. Also, I welcome guest suggestions. Submit them via the contact page at tomwoods.com. And don't forget, as always, libertyclassroom.com, the history and economics they didn't teach you. You can learn from me and from Kevin and from people you trust for a change while driving your car. You can become a pretty darn good debater. So you can always get a discount with the coupon code SHOW in all caps, S-H-O-W in all caps, at libertyclassroom.com. All right, let's move now to our guest. I'm so glad to welcome Executive Director of Gun Owners of America. Since 1976, he's held that position, Larry Pratt. Larry, welcome.
Tom, good to be with you, sir.
I've been on your program a couple times. Now I have a program to have you on, but I want to ask you, first of all, before we get into the traditional gun control sorts of arguments, I just want to ask you the kind of question that the average person who feels it necessary to have a gun in the house. What's the average person, not somebody who's living in the middle of the wilderness, but the average person in the average house, what kind of a gun does that person need?
Well, if you're in a house, you probably don't want the long gun because that might bump into things if you have to move it around. So most people settle for some kind of a handgun, and then you're really talking about what is comfortable for the person holding a particular gun. What can they handle when the gun goes off? And best way to do that is to go to a gun store that's attached to a range. Hopefully they might have a few firearms available for testing, and you can find out what best suits you.
Do you also recommend having a gun safe, or how do you recommend keeping it safe?
I recommend keeping the guns away from inquiring children, but the guns that I have available for self-defense are readily available away from children. They're not in a safe, which is in the basement, and sometimes I can hardly remember the combination. Certainly would not be able to remember if I were under attack. So my self-defense guns ain't in the safe. Anybody listening, I tell you the truth.
All right. Well, that is all right. That's good to know. As a matter of fact, as long as we're on this, let's go on a little tangent for a minute here. Because what about that statistic we used to hear? People would say, talking about gun ownership, they would say, "Look, you're more likely to wind up getting somebody in the household injured by your gun than you are to use it in self-defense. So it's counterproductive anyway. I mean, what's the response? Is that even true? And what's the response to that?
It's not true. It's a study. Well, mainly they point to a study done by Dr. Kellerman, and he defined self-defense as having killed the attacker. Well, give me a break. From all the available data, self-defense uses of firearms almost never result in killing the attacker. Once the bad guy sees that, uh-oh, I hadn't figured on this, they leave. In fact, one of our members told me that he was the subject of an attempted carjacking, and he reached down by his right hip, pulled up his handgun, and when a guy saw that handgun, he said, oops, wrong car. So that's
all right, fair enough.
That's the right measure of self-defense.
All right, I want to get back into my sort of guns 101 thing here, because a lot of times people use terms that they assume everybody just knows, but everybody doesn't necessarily know them. So I want to give you three terms, and you tell us what they mean. So we've got automatic weapons, semi-automatic weapons, and assault weapons. Maybe there's some overlap here, but can you just describe what these things mean?
Yeah, one and three are the same. An assault weapon, machine gun is almost always one that has a selector switch on it so that you can choose whether to fire one bullet with one pull of the trigger, which is actually a semi-automatic function, or most machine guns will have, assault weapons will have a middle position where you can fire a burst of generally three rounds. But you can go full auto so that the gun keeps firing until you pull your finger off the trigger, or until you run out of bullets, which will happen very quickly at that rate of fire. which is why most gun owners, for a self-defense situation, would not choose a machine gun, an assault weapon, because if they're firing full auto, a 30-round magazine could be empty within a couple, 3 seconds.
So then when the media is talking about assault weapons, though, are they always being careful to distinguish between automatic and semi-automatic?
To ask the question is to answer it. Of course,
so
the media
naive.
Are not. They are trying to make it sound as if the average American who has an AK-47 is somehow a Muslim terrorist attacking a busload of Jewish schoolchildren. The truth of the matter is that the so-called assault weapon, the AK-47, the AR-15, only fire one round every time you pull the trigger. And if you're going to get it to go bump, 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 you got to pull the trigger. Bump, bump, bump.
Then what makes this semi-automatic?
The way the gun is designed, in its internal workings, it cannot fire fully automatically. You must re-engage the trigger. You must pull the trigger again in that semi-automatic to get another round of fire.
Now, what about the typical claim, though, that, look, the average person, I mean, there are some people who are semi-gun controllers, who would say, look, I have no problem if somebody really feels the need to have a handgun in the house. But surely no American needs an AK-47, that the gun people, like Larry Pratt, are being completely unreasonable and maximalist in their demands. I mean, what are we going to have people driving down the street in their own tanks? So what do you say to the average American doesn't need a weapon like this argument?
Well, anybody that talks that way has no understanding of a life-threatening situation and how it can come about and what it might be like. The Korean merchants who were defending their businesses in Los Angeles during the riots in the 60s absolutely needed large magazines with their semi-automatic rifles because they were fending off mobs of people. This was not Marquis de Queensberry. This was a horrible anarchistic situation. And so they were standing in front or on top of their businesses with these rifles, with these large magazines. And it's very interesting that where they were, those particular neighborhoods were not torched, only where stores were undefended.
Now, I want to say something, though, about the legislative prospects for gun control, because it seems to me that even though you do see the Obama people who, you know, may have some executive order they want to pass, by and large, serious gun control measures are simply not popular. Like, can you tell us, for example, I don't know the details, but weren't there a couple of legislators in Colorado who just got voted out of office over this?
That was delicious. The president of the Colorado State Senate and the committee chairman, Angela Girón, who had rammed through the ban on many firearms magazines over a certain size, and I don't know what else, were defeated in a recall election. Chairman Girón had afforded the opposition something like 50 or 55 minutes, and that was it. Whereas any time before in the Colorado Senate, if enough people were interested in saying something for or against a measure, they had the time. And if that took 4 days, there were times when they had gone that long hearing witnesses. So the issue on the ballot in Colorado, Republicans, I hope you're listening, were two things: guns and arrogance. And that's what sunk those two legislators. And Girón from Pueblo, which is a kind of artsy, craftsy, neat-looking place, but uber-liberal, voted 12 points against Ms. Girón. She got smashed by Democrat voters. The so-called Reagan Democrats, it would be the best explanation, who apparently come out of hibernation when they hear a Republican convincingly sound like a conservative. Then they're all in. Memo to the GOP.
Well, doesn't it seem, though, that like Harry Reid's heart doesn't seem to have been in it when dealing with gun issues? Because I think they know these issues are a loser. They might as well expend their political capital on something else. So what would you say to a cynical person who would say, look, a group like Gun Owners of America, or even the sort of more lighter gun group, National Rifle Association, they thrive on panicking the population into thinking that gun control is right around the corner, when the fact is that legislatively it doesn't seem to have a chance. Now, is it because these groups exist that these things don't have a chance?
Well, during the fight to kill the Toomey gun control bill, the Toomey Mansion bill that would have expanded to virtually all sales, the instant so-called instant background check, we were able to convince – the NRA said nothing. It turned out Mansion said that they were actually undercover working for the measure. They had written the original background check, and now they were trying to enlarge it. The Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms openly endorsed it. So Gun Owners of America was pretty much alone up on the hill fighting this thing. And we were able to convince, before the NSA scandal erupted, this is mid-April, convince the Congress, the Senate, that the government can't be trusted. And look, as it turns out, after the NSA, it's really easy to explain this. If they want to listen in on what Aunt Susie's talking about with Mary, don't you think they want to have a list of who bought a gun and what kind of gun and where that person lives? I mean, duh. But we were able to make that case even before NSA. Now that the NSA scandal has broken out into public attention, I think we've got them. Now the real issue is, okay, Congress, when are you going to get rid of the background check altogether? They, I think out of, what is it, like 11 million background checks, they've brought a suit against, they've brought cases against not even 40 people. Now that's really useful crime-fighting tool, wouldn't you say?
Okay, so that answers what I was going to say, which is I think the average person who has no ideological axe to grind one way or the other might think, look, there are interests to balance on both sides. You know, we have liberty and we have safety, and you have to have a little bit of both. But if that's the real number, then this thing is – I mean, that may as well be zero. This thing is completely negligible.
Yeah, because they don't win all the prosecutions they bring either. So you are approaching zero, and mathematically – It's really a null figure. So yeah, this is not a crime fighting tool. Cops know that. The only reason the government does it is because they are nosy, and you know what? Instead of them knowing what kind of guns we have, we ought to know which one of them's have guns and where are their guns being kept. I think that's more important for us to know.
Did you happen to hear about this incident several months ago, and then it was resolved unhappily last month involving New Hampshire and the application in Concord, New Hampshire, somewhere around there, where the local law enforcement was applying for a federal grant for a bear cat because they said we are besieged by potential for domestic terrorism here because of the Occupy movement and because of the Free State Project. Now, whatever you want to say about either one of those groups, they don't strike me as the type who are going to commit acts of violence. And yet, this application went through.
The only violent act I've seen of the Occupy movement was to poop on a cop car.
Which presumably you can deal with that with a spray bottle and some paper towel.
It's not a life-threatening activity, that's for sure. I mean, you got to be a pretty low life to do something like that, but that's not life-threatening. Come on, take a breath.
So, isn't it interesting then that on the one hand we have all kinds of anti-gun propaganda on TV, but very, very little, at least in popular culture or on the news channels, very, very little commentary about the shocking level of militarization of the local police forces.
You know, that is something that has been studied by some, and it's a very concerning matter. We've got police departments that have militarized. Let me make a comparison. When I was in this Virginia legislature in the early 80s, I decided that it would be a good idea to go around and spend part of a day with a cop. So I got in his cruiser, and we rode around. He did various things, and he came to a nice suburban house here in Northern Virginia where Gun Owners of America lobbies the Congress, and he said, just stay here in the car. He went up to the door, knocked on the door, and a young man, that's around 10 o'clock in the morning. Evidently, the young man had just gotten up. He certainly looked groggy. The cop said a few words, went into the house, door closed. I'm sitting there waiting. And out comes the young man. I think he was cuffed, but anyway, put him in the back seat of the car and took him into the cop shop and booked him on a drug charge. Okay. One cop, I don't even recall that he had his hand particularly close to the holster. He had his right hand with a holster on his right hip, but I'm sure he was prepared mentally, but he wasn't steroidal about it. All right. Last year, in the county south of where Gun Owners of America is located, still in very suburban Virginia outside of Washington, D.C., there's this guy sitting on his front porch, and I think he'd been doing numbers. And, of course, the government doesn't like competition with their lottery, so they were going to arrest him. And the cops came up on the guy's house, guns out. This is for a numbers charge, right? And one of the cops, criminally, had his finger on the trigger, boom, and he kills the guy. What a difference in 30 years.
Wow. Yeah, and the thing is that cases like that, you know, they don't become the national fixation of the country the way, we might say more politically correct cases turn out to be. So
that's right.
All right.
That's exactly right.
we got 10-ish minutes, and I feel like if I wanted, I want to really do as thorough a job here as I can. So I guess we have to shift gears and talk a little bit about how you deal with the, I think the most common objection on the issue of guns involves comparisons between countries, right? And they complain and they say, look, this other country has very strict gun laws and everybody's happy and there are no murders, and here we are and it's like Yosemite Sam in the Old West. So what's the customary response to that?
Well, to start with, the Old West was the Wild West only on the screen. In reality, because virtually everybody was armed, the Old West, as you more properly put it, was quite a place under control, peaceful. The shootout at the OK Corral was very atypical. Now, let's go over to Britain, because you pointed to them. In Britain, they do have a very low murder rate. But in Fairfax County, Virginia, where Gun Owners of America is located and where people can obtain a concealed carry permit for a firearm rather easily, and where you've got to assume that there's a whole bunch of folks here in Fairfax County that are armed, we have a murder rate at 1 per 100,000, whereas over in peaceful old England, it's 1.7 per 100,000, and their violent crime rate, apart from murder, which is admittedly very low, their violent crime rate ranks them as the fourth most violent country in the world, after Jamaica, El Salvador, and Honduras. Boy, how's that gun control stuff working out for you now, old Great Brit?
When you've made arguments like this on TV, and of course people are not prepared for this because all they know are the talking points on the other side. Can you just tell us a little something about your experiences with Piers Morgan? Because I think a lot of people knew who you were up to then if they were plugged into the D.C. scene, but everybody knew who you were after Piers Morgan. I mean, you should be thanking that guy. I'm sure you were.
Privately, I have, but I really prefer not to rub it in his face because I'd like to have him bring me on again because it was so good for membership. Our server was crashed 3 times following his really over-the-top behavior during the interview. You're a very stupid man. When I went on Alan Colmes' radio show a week or so later, Alan, off the air, said to me, Larry, now you know I agree with everything Piers was saying, but I want to tell you, I was embarrassed.
Wow, so good.
So anytime one of our opponents wants to act in such a surly manner, fine. You know, I was 100 miles away from him. He was in no danger of me pulling out a piece and popping him. So if he wants to act like that, that's great. I actually did... during the interview, I began to get a little irritated, to say the least, about his behavior. And by the grace of God, it occurred to me, hey, hang on to yourself, bud. This guy's doing great all by himself. You don't need to help him. He's got it all taken care of.
Well, we're talking to Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America. Gunowners.org is the website, which I strongly urge you to visit. Did you guys get a bump up in website visits or phone calls or contacts after that? How could you not?
Oh, it was amazing. At one point, there were, I think, 3 of the guys using all the really available spaces in the office for live media interviews. I had to go out into the parking lot to do a TV interview. That happened twice. It was intense. So, Piers Morgan, I hope you're not listening, but if you are, we actually kind of like you.
I have no doubt. Well, listen, I want to take what little time we have left. When I had you as a guest on the Peter Schiff Show, I gave you an opportunity to explain to people the whole matter of the National Rifle Association and Gun Owners of America. And I think people are curious about this. And I was thinking that maybe you'd be a little shy about talking about it, and you weren't shy at all, because of course the first principle of marketing is differentiation, and you were quite eager to differentiate yourselves. So tell us the difference between somebody going to gunowners.org, visiting Gun Owners America, and somebody joining National Rifle Association. What differences are you going to notice, and what are the origins of those differences?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the NRA was supporting the Toomey gun control bill, the expansion of the background check, and they were doing it under the radar, but Senator Manchin thanked them for their support. We were very publicly opposing it. And it all comes about, I think, as you were asking, how we were founded. The NRA was founded 130-some years ago by Union officers following the war between the states who were appalled at what lousy shots most of their recruits were. And they wanted to improve that, so they developed a civilian marksmanship program, which actually became part of the Department of the Army. Guns are made available at very, very low prices to members of the public. They did a lot of target practice for people, training, good use of firearms. So they were a handmaiden to the government. Then you fast forward to the mid-70s when Gun Owners of America was formed. We were formed by a state senator who was appalled that the NRA had been playing footsie with the government during the time that the 1968 Gun Control Act had been put down our throat. And we were set up to oppose the government. So it's been very difficult. I think they're getting better at it, frankly. But it's been very difficult for the NRA to understand that they need to have an adversarial posture regarding the government that for so long was their bud. They were kind of joined at the hip, whereas we were formed in a period of under attack, and we were organized to fight back. And so that's always been our mentality, is to roll back even things that are already on the books. And I normally hear a lot of people from the NRA saying, well, if we would just enforce the gun laws that we have. No, the gun laws we have included the ban on guns in the District of Columbia. How did that work out? Oh, I would say even today with their very restrictive gun laws, not a total ban, they've got 17.5 murders per 100,000 compared to Fairfax County, where it's guns galore at one murder per 100,000.
Well, Larry Pratt, I'm really grateful to you for your time. I mean, I think we hit on a lot of important stuff. It's like it really is like a Guns 101. Best of luck to you in this. I hope people will go over there and visit you at gunowners.org. But keep on fighting and representing us so well in the media as you do.
Tom, thank you so much for your show and for having me on it.
My pleasure, Larry. Thanks again. Larry Pratt, everybody, from Gun Owners of America. Gunowners.org is the website. Before we go today, I want to update you on a couple quick things. I've had a one date shift here. I've got events coming up in Las Vegas, October 11th. Raleigh, North Carolina, October 19th is going to be absolutely huge. So you got to get to that one. I was going to be at Miami University, Ohio, November 4th, but that's being pushed to November 11th. So November 11th, Miami University of Ohio. Then November 20th, I've got an event in St. Louis, Missouri around lunchtime, and then in the afternoon in St. Charles, Missouri at Lindenwood University. And I'm still working on a possible appearance in the Spokane area, possibly for early December. I have to check on where we stand on that. So we got all that stuff going on. Make sure and visit me at tomwoods.com. I'm going to try to keep blogging, but I'll tell you, with all this, I've got probably 550 more videos to record for homeschoolers, for Ron Paul's homeschool curriculum. So if I'm not as good a blogger as I used to be, at least you know why. But I have the program. And don't forget, I want to know, what should I ask Bob Murphy? So tweet me some questions. Tweet me some questions at Thomas E. Woods on Twitter. At Thomas E. Woods is how to tweet them to me. And with the hashtag AskMurphy, and then I'll know. But I'm sure there are things like, you know, complicated questions about economics, and people just use this language and this terminology, assuming everybody knows this stuff. But they don't. So let's find out from Murphy, and he's a good guy. He can explain anything to anybody. So it'll be great. Talk to Bob Murphy tomorrow. So tune in tomorrow, noon Eastern once again. See you then, everybody.
Tom Woods Show.